I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. This is a story I will tell for years to come. It was the Friday before Christmas, 2017, when a sprightly raconteur ambled into Studio A to join me for Midday. His name was Gilbert Sandler, and on this particular Friday afternoon, the story he chose to tell was the story behind his beloved Baltimore stories. He'd been telling his tales for 15 years on WIPR, and a little reminiscing was in order. Indeed, it is. Gil Sandler is here today, along with Fred Rasmussen of the Baltimore Sun, for a retrospective about the many quirky and fascinating characters Gil has chronicled over the years. Plus, Voices Rise, a Baltimore choir of hope, sings us into the holiday spirit. First, the news. Good afternoon, everybody. On this Friday before Christmas, I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday, and we are very, very happy about that. Thank you so much. You know, a few years ago, I had the pleasure of interviewing the great American novelist E.L. Doctorow. He had just published a collection of essays called The Creationists. And in each essay, Mr. Doctorow ruminated on a subject that he knew very well, storytelling. In the introduction to his book, he wrote something about why stories were important, and it has stuck with me for years. He said, "Stories propose life as something of moral consequence." Stories propose life as something of moral consequence. The stories we tell, they guide and inform everything we know about the human experience. And for the last 15 years, from the very first days of WIPR, just after the license for the station was transferred from Johns Hopkins to the Your Public Radio Corporation, where it sits today, Gilbert Sandler has graced our airwaves with his Baltimore stories. Every Friday morning, he treats us to an eloquently crafted mini peroration on things Baltimore. Gil has introduced us to or reminded us about some of our city's most intriguing characters, the quirky, the quiet, the clamorous, the glamorous, heroes and hellions, saints and sinners, famous and infamous. Next Friday will mark a milestone of sorts. That's when we'll hear Gilbert Sandler's final new Baltimore story, which he has already recorded and which we await with a mix of joy and melancholy. But fear not, Gil will remain on the WIPR airwaves in the new year as we are treated to stories from the lexicon of tales that he has amassed over the last 15 years. So our Friday morning dose of Gil Sandler will not be interrupted, but today on this Friday afternoon, Gil Sandler joins me here in Studio A to reflect on his decade and a half of tale-telling, his varied career prior to this current project, and how the city that he has called home for nearly 95 years has both changed and in some ways remained the same. Mr. Sandler, it is an honor to see you, sir. How you doing?
Oh, that's a little heavy for me. I can't believe all that hype.
Well, you know, okay. You can handle the hype. You can. There's not many people can, but you, I'm confident can handle the hype.
I'll do the best I can. But your story does remind your essay there does remind me that some years ago, I wrote a story in the Sun about a streetcar that was what we call the L. That it ran up in the air, ran from I think Mount Washington down to Saratoga Street, and number of the car, I said, anybody remember streetcars? Some of your people might remember that.
Sure.
The streetcar, I said, was number 29 or whatever, I said. By coincidence, that same day, there was a trucker strike. Food wasn't coming into town. Medicine wasn't coming into town. But the next day, in letters to the editor, the only letters that appeared were those criticizing me for having the wrong streetcar number on that line. Nobody cared about the fact that there was a trucker strike and the city was going to starve.
That's right. We were starving to death. We couldn't, you know,
that told me
get
what
our
people
medicines.
Think.
Yeah.
You know, stories of wars and floods and fire and epical events, that everybody shares them. But the ones they really remember are the things that happen on the front steps and in the back alleys and at the dinner table when you're 5 years old when somebody tells you that Uncle George is going to balance a spoon on his nose, and, you know, all that stuff goes on in every family. And it's these small stories that make up the big story, which is the life we lead.
Yeah.
And I learned that, and someone told me, I should have thought of it myself, you know, there was a time when there was no digital communication. There was not even a printing press. It certainly didn't have tapes, but people knew what was going on. How did they know that? Stories. Grandfather to grandson, so people told stories. The big flood, the big whatever it was, the culture was carried on in the stories that people told. And I learned that I've done most of the neighborhoods in Baltimore, and I would sit on the steps of people down in Highland Town getting a story for, I used to write for the Sunday Sun. The magazine
section.
Your
Baltimore
section.
Glimpses you had for many
years. Well, that
years.
Was in the evening.
In the evening,
yeah.
Sun, too.
Yeah, I covered a period of almost 30, 40 years of my life with the Sun. And they'd sit on the steps, and they didn't talk about the election. It wasn't what was on their mind. What was on their mind was that Fred has a new girlfriend, and we don't like her. And things like that. It's a story.
Yeah. And listeners, if you have a story that you'd like to tell Mr. Sandler or ask him to recount one for you, you can join our conversation today with Gil Sandler, 410-662-8780, or email midday@wypr.org. If you want to send us a tweet, and they certainly haven't been around nearly as long as your stories have, @MiddayTomHall. I mean, Gil, you're absolutely right. The centrality of stories to our understanding of the human condition can't be overstated.
Well, there are so many great stories that happen every day. In 2003, a young woman named Shannon Mullaney was driving up to JFX on her way home after a hard day at the office, you know. She hears this screech and this crunch, and she realized she's been in an accident up there by exit 10, I guess, near Mount Washington. So she goes over the side of the road. Guy comes out of his car. He comes out. They exchange insurance information. And that's the end of that, they thought. Then she says to herself, I'm near the Mount Washington Tavern. I'm going to go over and steady myself. So goes to Mount Washington Tavern. She realizes the guy next to her is who? The guy that hit her. Says, you, what are you? I'll make this story short. They fall in love. They get married. And then they get divorced.
Yeah.
And Shannon said, I lost my husband, but I got that story. And I ended by saying, we got that story, too. Things happen
yeah.
like that.
And you have
that's
collected
what people
them,
talk about.
And you have collected them for all these years. I mean, for many years, even before you started sharing them with us here at WYPR. How did you sort of fall into this beat? I mean, people have their beats. Some people cover politics. Some people cover crime.
I was just drawn to it. The first story I ever wrote was about the Streetcar Museum. Which is down. I couldn't believe they're going to start bringing streetcars back, at least in a museum. I thought that was fascinating. And I don't know, there was something about the past. Who was it said the past is never past? Whatever. It's always with you, and it shapes your present and shapes your future. If you want to know who you are, you got to look back at who you were and what happened to you when, if you want to know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's a key to that. And it's also a key to the culture. I'm always amazed when I get these, this time of the year, I get these mimeographed sheets, not mimeographed, but printed sheets of here's how the year went at Christmas.
All right, Christmas letters, right.
And, you know,
they always begin something like, oh, I can't believe 2017 is already over.
These things that happen.
It doesn't seem like a hard thing to believe.
Important.
To me.
You may not think they're important. But the people who write it think it's important. There are stories in there.
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated by, you know, so-and-so changed jobs. And it's big stuff. And when he changed job, he found out there was no transportation. Whatever happens.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just drawn to that I knew early on that this city was made up, it was polyglot. It was, and it wasn't a lot of talk about that in those days. We weren't known then in the 50s as a city of diversity, but we were. And I was fascinated at the different kinds of ethnic communities that we had that were flourishing. And later on, not that many years later, they would give these festivals. And these dancers would come out of nowhere dancing in the Charles Center Plaza. They had their own city was made up of all these different kinds of people, young and old and rich and poor and black and white. And they had all been through, life has not been, you know, gentle anybody. And they told these stories. And I sat on the steps and I listened to them. I thought, that's fascinating. And it isn't particularly fascinating so much as it is who we are. It's what we do.
Yeah. And a lot of people ask you this. You and I have talked about this for years, and it's really kind of funny. So let me put it to rest. Let me give you the opportunity to put it to rest right now. People say, is that true?
Is that true?
That's the question that you get asked most of the time. You say a story and people listen to it.
People call me an email. I heard this story today. I really loved it. It was great. And is that true?
They're all true.
They're all true.
You're not concocting these things. These are not fables. These are actual things.
But I covered rich and poor, young, old executives, and I interviewed the wealthy, the poor,
entertainers. A stripper or two.
You've been talking to Sue Hess.
I have. Your good friend Sue Hess, who's with us today. She's in the control room, but we have discussed this.
She's fascinated by the story of Princess Naja.
Remind us of Princess Naja. And she was an entertainer down on the block, I take it.
She was what we call an exotic dancer. In those days, I thought some of those people were very interesting. Betty Mills, Blaze Starr, and I talked to them and got their stories. Very interesting stories. They were, quote, exotic dancers. She came in as a war bride. Something happened that didn't work out, so she decided to be an exotic dancer. She goes down on the block. Everybody's doing the same thing. She needs something different. Somebody talks her into dancing with a snake. The horrible thing. So she does it. And I said to her,
a live snake.
Live snake. Uh-oh. I said, suppose that snake bites
this
you.
This can't end well.
She says, well, I have this serum, and so I can't die from it. Well, one night she does her act with a snake, and the snake bites her. And she drinks the serum, and she dies.
Yeah.
But the end of the story is not just that. For the first time and last time ever, the block turned off all its lights for 1 minute in memory.
In memory.
Of Princess Naja.
Princess Naja. See? And, you know.
But it's a story, too.
Yeah, it is a story. But you had something of a mini specialty of exotic dancers on the block.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Well, you did more than one. Princess Naja wasn't your only one.
Well,
I mean, I bet they're all fascinating stories.
Was very
Star must have been very interesting. Yeah. Let's go to the phones. My guest is Gil Sandler, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Gary in Glendon, welcome to Midday with Gil Sandler.
Yes, hi. I have really enjoyed your program, Midday, but I especially enjoy Gilbert's presentation. I'm a bit of a historian. I enjoy it. But one comment I'd like to make. I grew up in Mount Washington. I believe I went to elementary school with your son.
And, my son, Joe, yes, he's an attorney
right.
now.
He was great. He really, he seemed to be the serious one. We used to joke and call him the lawyer.
He became a lawyer.
Well, he became a lawyer, yeah.
Absolutely. But your stories are great. I have really, really enjoyed it. And
thank you.
When we were in Mount
Do you
Washington,
think they're all true?
I'm sorry?
You think they're all true?
I believe it from you. I really
okay.
do. I think you've done a great job.
And, thank you.
One of the things I wanted to say is that I really became very interested in the historian and stories that you have given is because in third grade, Mount Washington, our teacher taught us the history of Mount Washington, made us study it and listen all about it. And from that point on, I was always very interested. And I like hearing your stories reflecting different areas of the city.
All right.
Thank you for that call, Gary.
We appreciate it. Gil Sandler, the paradigm of credulity and believability. Mm. Deanna in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Gil Sandler.
Thanks. First, I wanted to thank Mr. Sandler for all the stories. I'm from Baltimore. I was born and raised, and I love Baltimore. So, hearing the stories just makes me love it even more. And one in particular really struck me. When I was in high school, I read the very long novel called Exodus, and I loved it. I loved the story, and I thought it was amazing. And then one day, I heard Gil tell the story of how the boat, there was a ship, and it was loaded.
Right, down on Lancaster Street.
Yes.
Yeah, it was former Chesapeake Bay steamer, the SS Warfield.
Right.
SS President Warfield, and that was outfitted. In Haifa Harbor, they took down the sign, SS Warfield, and put up the sign Exodus.
And that made my day. I literally
gasped. Thank you. Yeah,
It made that connection and connected Baltimore to such a beautiful story that meant so much to me and just made me more proud. And I will miss you so much.
Thank you so much.
Well, the stories are going to keep on coming fast and furiously in the new year. So you won't you will get your Friday fix of Gil Sandler every week. Thanks for the call, Deanna. We will take a little break. We'll come back and we'll welcome our good friend Fred Matt Rasmussen from the Baltimore Sun, another raconteur and historian. Gil Sandler is my guest. He's been the mastermind behind Baltimore Stories, the ones that we hear every Friday morning here on WIPR for the past 15 years. His last brand new story will actually air next Friday, but fear not, in the new year, WIPR will continue to air all of Gil's Baltimore Stories at the regular time. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday. Tom Hall, stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall on this Friday before Christmas Day. By the way, coming up next week on Midday, on Monday, Christmas Day, we will have special holiday programming from NPR. Then on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we're going to dive into the Midday archives for conversations with three acclaimed authors. On Tuesday, we'll re-air one of my conversations with the great Nigerian author Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. On Wednesday, we'll hear my interview with Pulitzer Prize winner Elizabeth Strout. And on Thursday, Alice McDermott discusses her latest wonderful novel called The Ninth Hour. Coming up a little later today, one of the newest additions to the choral scene in Baltimore, Voices Rise, will join us to sing a few Christmas carols. If you've just joined us, my guest is the one and only Gilbert Sandler, whose Baltimore stories have been delighting us for the past 15 years here on WIPR. Another great historian of all things Charm City is here as well. Fred Rasmussen of the Baltimore Sun joins us. You are welcome to join us as well. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. And our Twitter handle @midday, Tom Hall. Fred, welcome back. It's good to see you,
Thank
sir.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
So, put in context Mr. Sandler's opus. Put in context for us what Gil has meant to Baltimore through the stories he's told, both here at WIPR, the stuff that he wrote for The Sun for many years, etc.
Fred. Careful.
Careful. The thing about Gil is, it just wasn't always, as he said earlier, the big story of a railroad wreck or a disaster or a politician. It was the stories from people in the neighborhoods, from around the corner. That was so charming about many of your essays. You know, the unknown, the kind of forgotten people. That's what was charming. And the fabric of the city and what made Baltimore, Baltimore. You know.
I watched you carefully. I stole from you whatever I could.
My lawyers will be calling on Monday morning,
of course. Imitation, the highest form of flattery. We got a whole bunch of folks that want to say hi, Gil. Barbara in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Gil Sandler and Fred Rasmussen.
Thank you. I wanted to, getting a little emotional. Thank Gil for explaining a big question in my life. 1969. I got a state senatorial scholarship for $750. In those days, those kind of scholarships were a political favor. My dad was a lowly bartender in Towson at Bernie Lee's Penn Hotel. And Gil told a story about the politicians in Towson doing their deals on napkins at the Stag Bar.
Oh, yeah, that was a Penn Hotel.
Yeah.
Yep, Bernie Lee's Penn Hotel.
That's where Agnew got his start, a very famous place.
And Barbara, your dad worked there?
My dad and my mom. Like, my mom said Agnew was a lousy tipper.
I have a correction for you. No bartender I ever met was lowly. They're all very interesting, so except my edit there.
We lived on the west side of town in Harry McGurk's district, and I was like...
Old soft shoes. That's what we used to call them, soft
shoes. Soft shoes McGurk?
Harry McGurk, South Baltimore. We represent South Baltimore District.
Yeah.
In those days, we had these Democratic clubs where they decided on a napkin who would be a next judge. Those were the days.
Yeah, and
they were the days for something. I'm not sure what. Yeah.
You know, and for my dad, you know, he wasn't out doing joining any organization. It was like go to work, come home, get up the next morning. You know, it was like so I could never understand. And it, I don't know when Gil put that story up, maybe 10, 15 years ago.
I guess
but
I
it
did.
Answered because that was the best opportunity. I was either going to go to college at UMBC. I got to go to St. Mary's College in Maryland.
Well, good for you. And if I had the slightest touch of influence, I'm proud and pleased with that.
Well, that's great, Barbara. Thank you so much for your call, and God bless. I appreciate the call. Let's go into Hagerstown. Paula wants to join Midday with Gil Sandler and Fred Rasmussen. Hi, Paula.
Hello. I had this friend whose aunt lived in Baltimore, in Roland Park, and she rented her house out during the 40s to a lady. And she lived on a third floor apartment, and there was a back stairway leading up to her apartment. I guess it was the fire escape. And after a while, they didn't see the lady, and no one was around, and she hadn't paid her rent. And so they had gone up. The neighbors said that it started to smell, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. So they went up, and they checked. And on the third floor, they found a horse walking around, and the horse was blind, and they couldn't figure out what was going on.
How'd the horse get up there?
Well, up the fire escape.
Yeah?
This horse happened to be, and the lady also, were performers in Atlantic City, and the horse was would jump off the high dive, which actually and was blinded by this.
Well, I apologize. That's a story I missed. I wish I hadn't.
Boy, boy, that's a great
right.
story,
I didn't know we had a horse living in Mount Washington.
Yeah. Is this true?
Is this true?
Is this true? Right, right.
You got a great story there.
Well,
write it up.
That's terrific, Paula. Thank you so much for that story. That's a great. You know, I got a piano on the third floor of my house, and people wonder how they got up there. But if there was a horse next to the piano, they'd really wonder. Oh, that's a terrific story. Thank you so much, Paula. Let's go to New Freedom, Pennsylvania. Clarence, welcome to Midday.
So much, Tom. And look, Gil, this morning your story on World War II, it touched my heart because the Christmas of 1970, I was stationed in Iran.
Oh, and well, this was 1943.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And my mom had sent a package to Iran for us for Christmas. And the package didn't get to us until the last week of January in 1970.
Well,
but you will be missed, and I have one other question.
Sure.
Did you ever have the opportunity to see the gentleman, the African-American man, North Avenue in Greenmount? He used to walk, and as he walked, he would spin. But he was always end up going the direction. If he was standing on a corner, he'd start walking across the street, and he would always be going in the direction that he would end up even after his spin.
My regret, I didn't know him. I knew a lot of characters. Melvin Perkins, who ran for, what was it, senator from a telephone booth on
right.
Pratt Street. Or,
right.
I mean, I knew Mr. Diz, you know, rode around throwing flowers around. But I'd never heard of that one.
Oh, that's great.
But it shows you there's plenty of stories to be written out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's terrific. Well, thank you so much, Clarence. I appreciate it and have a wonderful holiday. I mean, it does seem like there is this never-ending reservoir of tales. I mean, people have them and they stick with you, don't they?
Well, yeah. They do. And they're in every family.
And it changes... when you guys both see, you know, because Fred, you've been at the paper now 45
years.
You know,
yeah.
When you see the political discourse, for example, get as crude and brutish as it's been in these last couple of years, when you see people, just fabricating things, including the person who holds the highest office in the land, just blatantly making things up time and again.
They couldn't get away with that if Yardley was still cartooning. I guarantee you that. He knew how to take them apart, skin them alive in the paper. He took Jack Pollock down before every election. And it was a great deal.
But the discourse is so different, isn't it?
It's greatly different. You have to remember that there was no television back in the so-called old days, and all of the bargaining was done in the clubs, down in basements and taverns and so forth, and they would horse trade and so forth, and that all gave way when politicians could call directly to their constituency. But many people feel that the way it was done in the clubs was a slightly better way of getting government to work for you.
I don't know. I mean, can the argument be made that the smoky room should be, brought
right,
back?
Exactly. Yeah. I would vote for it.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, Fred, is that there was and Gill has talked about this as well in his books and in his stories, that there was a sense of common purpose. That's particularly around, for example, the World War II era, where the country really was, galvanized together. There seemed to be a sense of common purpose. Now, if you were a person of color, you would not have the same notion of common purpose as a white person. But even even given the terrible, systemic racism and systemic inequality that was baked into the cake back then and continues to be baked into the cake today, there was a commonality of where people thought the country should go.
I think that people in those days, especially during the war, were in this all together. And, a lot of good came out of that war. Integrated troops came out of that war. Women got to work, entered the workforce. A lot of good things came out of the war. But I think the overriding thing, and Gill's written about this a few times, and I have as well, we're all in this together. We have a common enemy, and that's it.
Well, speaking of I did some great stories. I thought some of them best for the out of the African-American community. African-American entertainers would come here and play at the Hippodrome, couldn't find a hotel would accommodate them. And so remember Harley the Sandwich Man? When Billie Holiday would come to Baltimore, he built on his at his McMenkin Street sandwich shop an apartment for her on the second floor. And when she came here, she didn't have to bother with the hotels. She went to Harley's and stayed at Harley's.
Was Harley's Harley white or black?
White.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
And he had a room for Billie Holiday.
The second floor of the McMenkin Street. Remember, he had something like 15. He was the original submarine guy. He took credit for inventing the submarine. You think he did, Fred?
No. It's not true.
It's not true.
Okay, there's one thing. That's not true.
Anyway, that's right. So, I mean, some great stories.
Let's go back to the phones. Mark in Catonsville, welcome to Midday with Gill Sandler and Fred Rasmussen.
Hi there. First of all, I want to thank Gil for all the great stories. I've been looking forward to this for years. And I want to mention a chapter of Baltimore history that it was my introduction to Baltimore. I used to come into town probably 73, and I went to the Aquarian University of Maryland, which was on Ruscomb Lane. It was run by Bob Hieronymus, who you probably know. He's did a lot of murals around town later.
Right.
And studied astrology and philosophy and various things. And it was a great thing for me. It was my introduction to Baltimore.
Well,
Aquarian University. Remember that?
I do not. There's a lot went on. I don't know. I mean, I barely touched the stories that are out there. Barely touched them.
After all these years,
somebody calculated that I'd written over 750 original stories. Believe me, there's another 750 hadn't even been touched.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's no end to them. Well, Mark, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Rebecca in Baltimore, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Hi.
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 Hello.
How you doing, Rebecca? You're on. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Well, I just wanted to say, Gil and Fred, thank you so much
for all that you've given us, all the stories. And what I wanted to know is, back in the 60s and the 50s, what would you say were one of the most famous or popular crab houses that you knew of? Not today, but back in the 50s or 60s.
Gordon's?
Good neighborhood crab houses, because there were so many.
Yeah, crab houses in
Gordon's
the 50s
of
and
East 60s. Baltimore was so famous, so popular, that the traffic commissioner, Henry Barnes, used to go down there on Saturday nights to direct traffic. That's a true story. And nothing ever happened. He couldn't get people to move on. You know, they were waiting for their crab cakes and all that. And he left town, up and made. He never had a crab cake in his life, but he left. He said, these people are crazy. I'll never go back.
Remember their slogan, Gil? The crab you're eating now was in the...
That last night in the
bay. The
crab
bay, right.
You eat today... Caught last night in the Chesapeake Bay.
Exactly, yeah. Right.
And
exactly.
There's a good that's a good piece that's of right. Copywriting. You know a little bit about the PR business. You were in that for a while.
A little bit for a while, yes. Yeah, sure.
I mean, the writing life. How did you stumble into or
stumble is a word.
Get into the into
stumble
the writing
through
life.
It. Well, you had to make a living somehow.
Yeah.
So that's how I did. Now, I've always been writing, and somehow or other, people seemed to like what I did, and one thing led to another, behind me is a body of work that I think is being archived at the Baltimore Museum of Industry.
It is indeed.
All
you can
my,
hear many of the Baltimore stories there, as a matter
right,
of fact, and they'll all be archived there.
That's
eventually.
Right, and they have all the Sun Paper Baltimore Glimpses, and there are 30, 40 years of those
right,
things.
Right.
And they tell
the
me scholars come
sun.
Down and look at it. I can't imagine that, but they do.
Oh, of course.
And it's digitized. You give them a subject, and I've written about it. It just shows up on the screen.
Did you ever think about leaving Baltimore?
What?
Just wondering.
What?
You were born here.
I didn't hear you 90, even ask that.
95 years ago. I mean, did the thought
Except
ever occur
time
to you?
Out, I was in the Navy for 3 years, and I went to college in Philadelphia. I never left.
Yeah.
I never even moved to the county. Everybody moved to the county. I never moved to the county. I have never lived in the county. I don't know what they do out there, but they've never gotten a good story out of the county.
But it never dawned on you to, you know— Go to New York, go to San Francisco, go to Atlanta.
Never.
There
I
you
had
go.
An offer many, many years ago, to go to New York. And they said they had a job for me at the New York Times, but I was engaged to be married and this and that and this and that. It didn't work out. But there's always this what if in my mind. What if I had gone to New York?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that didn't happen. I know I'm not alone in that. Mark in Laurel, welcome to Midday with Gil Sandler and Fred Rasmussen of The Sun.
Yes, good day. So my story is this. My Uncle Tom was in the Army training at Fort Meade, Christmas time, 1943. And so they all got three-day passes, and several guys in his unit were not able to go home to, like, the West Coast and stuff like that. So he said, hey, come on up with me to his sister who lived up in Philadelphia. So a bunch of them, you know, got on the train at the Baltimore main train station, Penn Station in Baltimore, took the train up to Philadelphia, Christmas Eve. And in those days, you know, people didn't lock their doors. You know, Philadelphia, they didn't. Baltimore, they didn't. And so they let themselves in. It was, you know, everybody had gone to sleep. And in the morning, when the kids came down, they were delighted. There were 12 soldiers. And my
there was a lot
Jack
of that during the war.
Had asked his mom and dad for toy soldiers. And so he knocked on his mom and dad's door and said, thank you, mom and dad. You brought soldiers. Well, and my sister came down and, you know, she loved to see him because you didn't know if you were going to ever see him again.
This was a very, very busy war town. We had over 1 million people in Baltimore in those days. 1 million people.
Right.
We have something
some
like,
400,000 more than now.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it was a big, bustling town. We had everything was...
Yeah. Well, thanks for that call, Mark. I appreciate it. By the way, gentlemen, as writers, I have a little writing contest that you may want to enter, which I just heard about the other day, and I thought it'd be fun to tell folks about. There's a journal called the Journal of Public Health Policy, and you may have heard that the Trump administration has banned 7 specific words and terms from the vocabulary
I'd
of several federal
yeah.
agencies, like the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They've said you shouldn't use these words when describing the budget and stuff. The words are vulnerable, entitlement, diversity, transgender, fetus, evidence-based, and science-based. right? The Trump administration has said that the folks in
I
the
I could
CDC
use them all in can, one sentence.
Well, that's the contest. They have the Journal of Public Health Policy is having a contest for people to use those words in one sentence. The deadline is Friday tonight, you know, Friday at midnight tonight, and you send it to the Journal of Public Health Policy, and we've got the link to the website on our WIPR.org/midday website. You send it in, and you'll win a big prize.
With one hand tied behind.
There you go. Now, I bet you
we'll
could.
Do it.
See?
We'll do
so
it.
You guys
we'll
got to do it. You guys got to enter. So, folks, the competition in that contest just got tough. Let's see if we can sneak one more call in. Dan in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Gil Sandler and Fred Rasmussen.
Hi, Gil. An old friend. I want to send my greetings. That sounds like a fabulous contest. I'm sure you'll win. Would you share for us at this time of the year your recollections of Howard Street at the department stores, and remind folks about the Barnes dance, Mr. Barnes, who just mentioned?
It's a lot to do. I don't know how much time we have left. But downtown, which was then the retail, was Howard and Howard and Lexington, was a fairyland of these Christmas windows, which were elaborate. You see some of it in the fire stations where they still have
Christmas gardens.
These cars moving and trains moving and lights flashing and angels flying.
A winter
all over
wonderland.
And hustlers
right?
and hotels. The windows, people were lined up four and five deep along the Howard Street, and it turned into a fairyland. And I always remember because for some reason, there was a guy who roasted chestnuts. He had one of these little carriages, mm-hmm. and he roasted chestnuts. Mm-hmm. I can still pick up that
you
aroma.
It's a great Christmas smell.
It was a great, exactly right.
All right, well, that'll be our final story for today. But as I said, your stories are going to continue on every Friday morning here on Midday, although your last brand new one will be next Friday morning. So
thank you,
Gil. Have a wonderful holiday and a happy new year, and we look forward to many, many
my
more
best
years
to all my
story.
Listeners, and I appreciate all the kind words.
All right, and Fred Rasmussen, thank you as
Tom.
Well, sir.
Thank you.
A great holiday.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. All right, Gilbert Sandler shares a Baltimore story with us, as I mentioned, every Friday morning during Morning Edition here on WIPR. His final brand new story next Friday, but of course, the Baltimore stories will continue into the new year. Coming up after a break, a little holiday music from Voices Rise, a Baltimore choir of Hope. They operate out of Paul's Place in Baltimore's Washington Village Pigtown neighborhood. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.